Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, April 4th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. My name is Hezzy Eris. I'm your host today. And we're going to begin the day, as we always do on Monday, with John Bailey. John Bailey is a White Plains Citizen-Net reporter, publisher, and editor. And his website you can find is at WPCNR.com or WhitePlainsCitizenNetReporter.com. And we're going to start to talk to him about a couple of issues that are pertinent, particularly with WhitePlainsCNR.com. So one of the things that he ended up, I'm waiting for him to call in. So one of the things that came about, of course, was there was a judge by the name of Patrick McAllister, who on the 31st of March declared that the Democratic legislature's redrawn district maps based on the 2020 census were deemed unconstitutional and ignored protocol. So John has delineated the documentation, and you could link through it at WPCNR.com. You could also see it if you go to the YonkersTribune.com website, and you'll find it there in the promo for today's broadcast. So the big question is, should the court's decision be appealed? It could unsettle the 2022 election process. And the League of Women Voters advised that the outcome is solely the responsibility of the New York State Legislature for ignoring the 2014 constitutional amendment and the will of the voters. So the League called on the legislature to adopt post-haste redistricting lines with bipartisan support that comply with constitutional standards. So that gives you an introduction to what's what, and it looks like John Bailey is on the line. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm from White Plains, New York, USA. 38 degrees.
It's unbelievable. It's winter.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And I thought it was supposed to be, you never can tell. Well, so bear with me just one moment, John. I don't know who's calling it at another number, so we'll just see who that is in a moment.
Okay.
And then we'll be right back to you. Good morning, sure. Caller. Did you have something you wanted to say, or are you just listening in?
I'm just listening in, but I do have something I want to say at the same time. I never had a better lawyer than a Jew. Jews. A better lawyer. Because I've been in a few scrubs against the police, and every time I had me a Jew lawyer from New York, I got out of them. You think that?
Well, that's all very good. Well,
hey, I'm gonna listen to you now.
Okay, we're gonna put you on the hold button so you'll be able to listen in. No problem. I appreciate your calling, sir. Hold on. All right, John. Well, sorry for the intrusion, but no problem.
Great. I mean, it's great.
Thank God there's some good Jewish lawyers out there.
Right.
So anyway, the reason, did you have an opportunity to hear the introduction? Because you wrote this fantastic. Oh, great. So where are we making a mistake with regard to the legislation? How did this all come about, and why did it go the wrong way? Do we know? Was this Judge Patrick McAllister's decision about the Democratic legislature's redrawing the district maps? What's going
on? Well, he faulted it in his decision for the fact that they were supposed to present all the districts to the committee, the nonpartisan committee. Okay.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They just decided it among the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And then promulgated.
Why did
them.
They? Do we have a concept of why anyone in their right mind would want to dismiss part of the electorate, even if it was one individual? The point is, we don't live that sort of a governance, do we? Well, maybe we are, and I just was so too stupid to realize that this is what's been going on. We marginalize each other here.
Well, what apparently happened was that they cut out two Republican assembly districts in Steuben County. No explanation has been given for that. To my knowledge, it was not mentioned in the decision, which I read. And
yes,
Judge McAllister said, well, number one, according to the law in 2014 that was passed, that whenever the census is redone, if the representations change and one party controls both houses of the legislature, they have to have an impartial redistricting committee. And they can decide it among themselves, the parties in control, but they have to present it as a procedure to this committee, which he doesn't describe what it's made up of, but they didn't do that. They just did it. And he found that it was totally against the state constitution. And he also said that if it is determined to be gerrymandered, which of course it is gerrymandered in favor of Democrats, and then that is unconstitutional too. So it has to be redone. Now, what's fascinating what's fascinating really is this has been kicking around now for a number of months. And he comes down with this decision now? It's amazing.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate. I guess there's so many laws on the books, and most people are totally ignorant of it. Or choose
so is the legislature. So is the legature. They ignore at their they ignore them at their peril. They ignore their own laws at their peril. This is a fiasco.
Well, what I never understood is considering there's such a compendium of work that most people and people are in office for either 2 years or 4 years. There's a limit to how much they know, and quite often they don't even know, you know, what their rights are as a legislator, and so they have no clue. But don't we have an oversight committee that's supposed to inform these people? And what about these people's staff? Or are they just as ignorant as the rest of us?
I think ignorant is a too strong a word. My feeling is they knew what they were doing. They never expected it to be challenged, which is always a mistake, considering the litigant nature of the opposing party. And what has happened is, of course, they went to a court and challenged the law as being really an affront to the voters in Steuben County, who had duly two seats. It is an affront to the voters to take away their stuff, you know, their say, their standing. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
And so now what has happened is he says they've got to redo the entire redistricting by the 11th, or he will do it.
Oh, wow. That's probably freaking them all out. Because they don't want the judge to do it. And the judge
don't
is going
you
to be
think,
very, very balanced.
Hey, a light bulb has just been flashed on across the state that they want to consolidate power by reorganizing the districts, okay? And, nobody knew that. But that's what the Republican governors are doing all across the country. I mean, this is nothing new.
It's not. So, but what's happening to our demeanor? Were we ever, you know, a bit more accommodating of another perspective, or have we been this almost violent in our holding on to the concepts that we believe in? So whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you've got positions, and that's almost sacrosanct. You know, I think it's almost like a god, and we're freaking out here. This is not good. It's so much disrespect.
No, it's not. And you and I both remember Everett Dirksen and
yes,
Republicans of the past. he was from the Middle West. I believe he's from Illinois. But I mean,
yes,
I'm not sure about that. And when the Republicans spoke during the Eisenhower years, when I first became aware of actual government, other than the principal of my schools, they spoke rational. They made compromises. They did what was in the best. They appeared to do what was in the best interests of the country. They came together, and that was when, I believe, Republicans controlled Congress in the 50s.
You know, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but
yeah.
But on the other hand, we weren't balanced, and we didn't respond to everybody in our society because we marginalized so many. You could marginalize them on ethnicity, on color, on gender, on sexual preference, and we're starting to see all of that now. Has it
gone out
of whack?
It's coming back.
Or are we...
Or never left.
It never left. So we're at each other's throats again. We never start.
However, what has happened is that we are not seeing reality. That's what our problem is. We want our own reality. Each side wants to believe that we don't really want immigrants in this country because they're taking our jobs away. And I have news for the people who feel they're losing jobs. You don't want the jobs that many minorities have to do and take when they come to this country. You don't want them. You're not. They have to work extremely hard. They have to sometimes work 2 to 3 jobs if they can get them to make ends meet. And immigrants have done a lot for this country over the years I've been alive in it. And they deserve a lot of credit for contributing to the country, not tearing it down. And when we get the very minor amount of 100,000 Ukrainians coming to this country as refugees, they will really contribute much to this country, even though we are not helping them as much as we should. But that is hard to figure out.
That's the question in my mind. There were so many people who came to the United States. They were Haitian. So predominantly a black community. They share the island with the Dominican Republic. So half Haitian, half Dominican Republic. The point is, I don't know how old they are. The history goes back to when the French once owned the property, and they were part of the French. What the right term is, but they were part of the French realm.
French West Indies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But why are we welcoming Ukrainians? Are we welcoming them because of the color of their skin? And why are we so, look down on the Haitian? What's the difference? They are people, aren't they? They're not stupid.
Well, this is the root of prejudice. If a person
the root of what?
Is not prejudice, if a person is not like you, they must be bad. That is the thinking, and you're afraid of them. I remember when my father would drive us into the city and we'd cross the Triborough Bridge and go down into Harlem, he would lock the doors of the car. I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the impression that, oh, this is a bad area. And now there's still that fear that was promulgated about black communities. But now New York City is very, very diverse. There are neighborhoods of both black and whites. Paris, the thought, existing peacefully together.
Yeah, those are beautiful words, John, but do they mean anything? We're at each other's throats. Look at the crime. We killed each other. We got guns. We maim each other. We rape people. It just doesn't seem to stop. I don't understand what the hurdle is that will get us to the other side of civility. I don't get it. I just don't see it anymore. I don't find, if I don't like somebody, then I don't like them, not because of the color of their skin, their religion, or whether they're male or female, or their sexuality. Those things don't matter. You're either a kind-hearted human being, or you're not.
Yes, how true that is. If they treat you with respect, you treat them with respect. It's funny how that works. I've been to a lot of places out in the Middle West on softball tournaments and ice skating. And I have never met a person who, when they found out I was from New York, said, well, we don't like New Yorkers here. I never encountered anything like that. Everybody was there because we had a common interest. Our daughters were skating and we supported the sport. And I mean, I think everybody has a common ground. What does everyone living in this country really want? They want a decent job. They want decent pay. They want to be rewarded for it. And the biggest problem is not people taking jobs. It's businesses not paying them enough money, not respecting them as workers, and treating them badly, especially when times grow hard and businesses get bailed out, and they lay people off when they weren't supposed to. They did that.
Absolutely.
And nobody's calling them on it. I don't see anybody from Congress demanding that the aid that businesses got, like airlines, like banks, like manufacturers, who are laid off people to make their first quarter results look good, which they did. Anytime you look at a corporation that is making a huge profit at the end of the first quarter of 2022, well, they cut staff.
Yes, that's true. Well,
nobody writes about that.
Are we moving in another direction? Because recently, only in the last couple of days, the Amazon workers, they actually voted to become unionized. Are we seeing a change? Because
workers are beginning
totally
to realize
unexpected.
That they're on their own. Workers are beginning to realize that they are at the mercy of their companies. And that's why the labor movement started. People died for workers' rights. They were shot to death by private law enforcement agency, the Pinkertons, during the Chicago strike on the Pullman Company. It was one of the great disgraces. And it was a massacre, firing on unarmed workers because they were disrupting the U.S. mail. What a crime.
Mm-hmm.
It was faster then than it was now, is now. Right?
Mm.
But, the labor movement history used to be taught, but I don't think they do that much anymore. We don't hear about those great leaders at much peril to their own lives. Eugene Debs, I think, served.
I don't think anyone even knows his
term.
Name.
Yeah.
They probably don't even know how to spell his name.
Yes. But, and now, and really, there were reporters that reported on how bad the industries were. Sinclair Lewis, Upton Sinclair, one of the muckrakers there, Upton Sinclair. I think he wrote The Jungle. I think he wrote that.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And The Jungle exposed the unsanitary conditions under which meat was put out to the public. But anyway, the problem is business had no responsibility back then, and the labor unions brought that.
Well, have the labor unions also been maligned by their own success? And so are they also keeping people out of the system? And why do we believe it's appropriate for a corporate structure to pay less than they should? They're not paying a living wage in many cases. And
no, $15 an hour is ridiculous.
No, absolutely.
In this day and age. And,
yes, it is.
And one of the great perpetrators of mistreating labor is McDonald's. For years.
Yeah.
Underpaying young people and working them all hours. And
well, you know, it's also interesting, too. You know, we always try to make believe that the people who were working at the McDonald's and other fast food chains were all teenagers. I don't know if you've passed a fast food joint recently, but you could see people there who are 70 years of age, 60 years of age.
Yes, because they need the money.
They never earned. They never earned the capacity to have a cushioned life. They can't
You make
retire.
An excellent point. Make an excellent point. I mean, you see persons that clean houses for a living, working well up there in age because they have to. And, you know, I sit here collecting my Social Security because I made a good living.
Exactly.
And
I
was lucky.
In a sense, can society really be self-respecting if we allow the monetary impact of the way we define who is entitled to get a job, who isn't entitled to get a job, and that also means that they are either entitled or not entitled to get an education? And why aren't we investing in that? Wouldn't we get a big bang for the buck for every child that is educated and can earn a living?
Well, we did. We have done that. We made it possible for many to attend colleges that could not afford them by granting them the wonderful student loan at exorbitant rates, which many, after they're finished, are still have to pay off for years. It was not the wonderful gift that the college described it. And
exactly.
Many can. That's right.
It's
an
albatross around your neck.
It's an economic albatross. That's what you said, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What it is. Yes, because they can't. They have to dedicate so much of their salaries to paying off the loan. It's like you're slapped with a mortgage as soon as you get out of college, but you don't have the house.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't. You can't afford to live on other than the very, really low cost apartment, and certainly, I think it's one of the causes of the decline in the birth rate over the last 20 years.
Oh, absolutely, because
you can't afford to have a kid until you're at least 30. I mean, that's what we did.
And
that is a 10-year delay.
Exactly.
In the
That's
population
exactly right.
growth. And nobody talks about that. But, I mean, if you make it very difficult for the young people, and they don't get as good jobs.
No.
Because the starting salaries are much lower unless you're like in law or medicine. But in medicine, you know, you basically are subsidized because you
exactly.
have to attend
That's
medical
very true,
school
too.
So much. You have to have parents with who are well-heeled paying it and or
mm-hmm.
you get a scholarship or something. I mean, I don't know how you afford medical school.
I have no idea.
And we are now becoming, are we become running into a shortage of doctors as a result?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we are. And
well,
who knows? But I mean, all this is tied.
We're going to be importing all these people because our population is not growing them. So we are actually subsidizing our population growth by bringing in more people, and yet at the same time, that's exacerbating as well a lot of the bias that we have in the nation. But I guess the biggest
thing I would say
we
so.
Haven't. Yeah, but we haven't been able to restructure our financial ability to serve the society overall.
Mm-hmm.
Or predominantly,
and
that's where we are right now. So,
yes, and
so
it's being exploited. Being exploited.
I still,
for people
I still say, like,
who would
why,
yeah, by
you know,
the
like
opposition party
in upstate New York, who come from who knows where, and they're working 60 hours a week, and they get I have no idea even what they get. As far as payment, but that's so we can buy grapes at the supermarket for so little money. But the point is, why do we have to afford everything on the backs of so many people who are barely making a living?
Well,
so
we were being able to afford less and less because of the inflationary factor brought about by corporations ratcheting up prices to improve their bottom lines. I don't hear anybody saying that, and the corporations explain it, oh, well, our cost of manufacturing goods and the cost of labor is going up, and so we have to raise our prices to keep the supply going. Bite the bullet a little bit, corporations. Bite the bullet. Just a little. In other words, don't pay off the shareholders. Pay off America, which kept you in business by buying goods from you online, adopting their lifestyles, and adopting to the high prices of today. The inflation is the cause of the corporations raising prices.
Exactly.
It has something to do with it, but you can just not raise the prices. You can break even a little bit and make a little less profit. And the profits are astronomical for many companies, big companies right now. I mean,
absolutely.
That's why the stock
well, John,
market is so out of the roof. Oh, by the way, I want to mention something about the decision that judge made on the voting districts. If this has given the Republicans an amazing issue to take over the state, because the Democrats fooled with the election districts.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
That's right. That is going to be so hammered by whoever runs for governor. So hammered. Really stupid.
So
they gave the Republicans an issue.
Race for governor.
Yeah, that's right.
We have a very
I did want to mention that. They absolutely a mind-dead procedure. But that is not surprising.
We could probably go on for 5 hours, but we can't.
There's a lot of ripe, rotten fruit hanging on the tree to just pull
absolutely.
Off.
Absolutely. We'll have to pick this up again next week, John. All the best to you.
Well, you too, Kezi.
Take care.
Hang in there and keep burning up the airwaves with the truth.
Will do. Take care, John. Goodbye.
Good day.
Okay, let's – good day. So let's bear with me a moment while I bring in Mr. Edelman. Bear with me a second. There we are. Hello, how are you? Michael Edelman, what a pleasure. We should just introduce you very quickly. You're the political analyst and, you know, not everyone has a barreled expertise. How did you get there?
50 years of doing it.
Is that how it is?
Yeah, it's 50 years. I started, believe it or not, I started when I was 16 working for Barry Goldwater in Yonkers. I think there were so few people for Barry Goldwater, I believe I was head of Goldwater for president in Yonkers. I don't really remember, or close to it. There weren't a lot of people in Yonkers supporting Barry Goldwater. And most of my friends' parents wouldn't speak to me when I did that. Barry didn't do very well. My father knew Barry Goldwater. That probably had something to do with why I was supporting him. My father was from Arizona. He got credit from the Goldwater store to open a store, a little men's store around the, you know, in three of the cities there. So we had a familial relationship. But anyway, then I worked for Nelson Rockefeller in law school, flew around the state with the governor, and assistant director for the youth for the entire state. And then, you know, the rest is history. I wound up consulting in Westchester. But I've been doing this kind of thing for 50 years. More.
Yeah, it's amazing. 60. Thank goodness for that, because I think we would be in a barren wasteland if we didn't have you. And then,
you get certain perspectives. No, you get different perspectives. The longer you're doing it, the less partisan I think you are, the more objective you are, and the more you are able to predict.
Absolutely. And you also have tremendous contacts and insight, which just puts it all together. I mean, it's like a smorgasbord of information. You're ahead of the curve so often. It's amazing.
Well, not you meet a lot of people over in 60 years.
Absolutely, you do.
So, yeah.
Well, speaking of meeting people, I don't know if you met what's going on, like President Putin in Russia, but has he lost it? I mean, he is such an angry and man, and he's taking it out on the people in Ukraine. What have they done to him that has upset him so much? Or his country, Russia, has turned out to be a weakling. And it's all BS about him.
There's a lot of stuff going on. He overestimated his military's ability to take the capital and lop off the head of government in Kiev. He overestimated them. He underestimated the ability of Ukrainian soldiers to fight. They're fighting for their way of life. Soldiers don't know why they're fighting. Because the only reason they're invading is because Putin has some notion that he wants to either reassemble the USSR or reassemble the Russian Empire. And originally, Ukraine was part of Russia. Matter of fact, my grandfather on my father's side came from Ukraine. So it was Russian back in the middle 18. It was Russia. He didn't say Ukraine. He said it was from Russia. But it was Ukraine. That was the part of Russia. But it was the same thing as saying Russia back then. So, but Ukraine is an independent, democratic country. And unfortunately, there are people on the right in this country, like the Tucker Carlson's of the world and the Donald Trump's of the world, who admire, disdain, they admire authoritarians, them, people that want to take part in their country's democracy, including people here who might be brown and black. It all comes up. They admire Putin because he's white and Christian and wants to preserve white Christian nationalism in Europe, and they want to do the same thing in the United States. The difference is, the United States has a constitution. Russia does not. The United States is a democracy. Russia is not.
you know.
So where do we go at this point, or will it be? What amazes me is that we know that the Russians have a military, but they've had a history of their own military people abandoning them and running off. So they have a history of that, and they're very disillusioned working for Putin.
Well, they've lost a lot of generals. I understand one general shot himself, committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Other generals have been killed by – so what they don't have command and control in their army. They either have – they have generals and they have fighters. They don't have anybody in the middle to execute the plans. So if the generals go out front, they end up getting shot.
Yes.
If the generals lead. Usually what's lead – you have a sergeant or a lieutenant leading, and the generals are plotting. That's not the way the Russian army works, and they're doing very poorly – because they don't have that command and control. They don't have the discipline. And frankly, there's no reason for Russian conscripts, and most of these kids are conscripts, to fight in Ukraine to change Ukraine's way of life. They have, many of these people have friends and relatives in Ukraine. Now they're bombing and killing children's wards and maternity wards and hospitals. I mean, in there's a town near Mariupol where they found dead bodies in the street who were tortured, maimed, and then killed. It's a disgrace. It's war crimes. Putin is a war criminal.
It is war crimes.
Period. That's what he is.
They also, I think it was a place called Bucha, B-U-C-H-A.
That's it.
I don't know how.
That's it, yep.
And supposedly some of the people's hands were tied behind their back, and then there are people all over on the streets being eaten by dogs. They're not buried. It's unbelievable what's going on.
Well, they're barbarians. They are. You know, that's what happens when you don't have any discipline. They're not abiding by the Geneva Convention, by the rules that say you can't kill civilians. They're violating the tenets of warfare, period.
Yeah. Why did Europe buy into this concept that Russia was so strong? China must be laughing their heads off, saying this is the great power of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
No, because top-down authoritarian governments tend to fail for exactly the reasons you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason that Putin is in power is because there are 100 or so kleptocrats or, you know, authoritarians like him, oligarchs, who make billions of dollars, and they keep him in power in return for them being able to bend the rules, break the rules, and accumulate oodles of money. However, the society is not holding together because there's nothing for them to hold together for. They don't have any freedom. They don't have democracy. They have to shut up or die. There's he passed the law that said if you report the news essentially accurately and unfavorably to him,
mm-hmm.
you go to jail for 15 years.
Yes.
So if we were in Russia, we couldn't be talking about the disaster in Ukraine that is the Russian army, because we would go to jail.
Yeah, exactly. What is amazing is that the entire infrastructure has kept the Russian people, no matter how you define them, no matter where they are, in the dark.
Yeah.
So Putin's BS is flying with a good part of the society, and others have some capacity to learn really what's going on. How much longer can he hang on to power at this rate? Because more and more people are going to find out the truth.
Well, I don't know that they are. I mean, how are they going to find out? They
He's eliminated Facebook and Twitter. All right.
Yes.
They don't have any Russian television other than state television, propaganda TV.
Right.
So it's as if you were living in the United States and the only thing you had was Fox News. Okay,
yeah,
you'd be getting
true.
Tucker Carlson's view, a pro-Putin view, and you wouldn't be getting the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, in the United States, there are multiple news outlets that actually report from Ukraine, and you can see what's going on for yourself. That is not true in Russia. So I wonder how Russians are going to come to the conclusion that Putin needs to go or that Putin committed war crimes. I don't see that. They're living in another reality over there.
Well, they are. So if you're not in Ukraine and you aren't in any of the areas within Ukraine where there's fighting, you would probably not know what's going on.
Correct.
So
Well, they are living in another world. I mean, there are people in Russia who have Ukrainian relatives that are telling them on the phone what is going on, and they do not believe it.
Mm-hmm.
The information they're getting is filtered through Putin.
Yeah. What did the rest of the world did we fail by not really pointing out all these things that were happening in Ukraine? Did we take too long to point out what was really going on? Spoken up 8 years ago when Crimea was taken over? Why were we silent then?
Yes. Well, that's a good question. We were. We allowed Putin to go into Crimea. We didn't do anything. So all of these sanctions that they're doing now probably should have been done a decade ago. But they weren't. They weren't. So Putin looked at Biden. Putin looked at Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Putin said, now's my chance to go into Ukraine because the United States is divided. They looked at the country. They know they interfered in the 2016 election to divide the nation with lies on the internet from the trolling agency that they had. And he figured they're not going to do anything, and he was wrong. He was absolutely wrong because the reverse of what he thought was going to happen. NATO is stronger than ever under Biden's leadership. Unlike Donald Trump, who trashed NATO and tried to withdraw from NATO, now NATO is acting with one voice in supplying Zelensky and Ukraine with what they need to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition, countries like Finland are contemplating joining NATO because of what Russia is doing. So essentially, Putin got the opposite of what he thought he was going to get. He got a strengthened NATO, a resolve by the Ukrainians to save their way of living in their homeland, and he got smacked in the face by the fact that his own Russian army was incompetent.
Yeah. You know what? I don't
know
about
army
you,
is incompetent.
Absolutely. I don't know about you, but I never really thought that there was such a democratic concept that was living in Ukraine. I never thought that they were that free. I always thought of Russia as being controlled from the top I guess I fell into the trap of thinking they were very powerful and that they were a fulcrum and they balanced out the power structure between the United States and Russia, and China was growing up, and Europe was really not really quite all there, I guess because Europe wasn't together. Why did we buy into that? Was our intelligence not appropriate?
Actually, our intelligence was pretty good, except we thought Russia would be able to go to Kyiv in 48 hours, and that was not true. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Our intelligence didn't realize the fighting ability of the Ukrainian military. But we have been training the Ukrainian military for a decade. We've been training them how to fight, how to use weapons, anti-tank weapons, anti-missile weapons, anti-aircraft weapons. and how to fly planes. So they're perfectly trained. They're trained better than the Russian army is trained. And it shows because they have pushed the Russians out of Kyiv, totally out of Kyiv. And so whereas a couple of weeks ago you saw the Russian army making moves across that country, now they're relegated to a very small part of eastern Ukraine called the Donbas. They're going to, which is Russian-speaking, by the way. The area is primarily Russian speakers. And I would presume there is more sympathy to Russia there than there is anywhere else. But look, I mean, that's where they're going now. They're retreating from the attack on the capital. They're moving their troops away from Kyiv.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about the inability of the Russian fighters to fight. And so I think the ultimate resolution of this, of course, is to get rid of Putin. If Russia gets rid of Putin and gets somebody in there that doesn't want to reassemble the Russian Empire, maybe Russia can live in peace with the rest of the world, which is what everybody thought, by the way, when this KGB agent named Putin was handed the reins by Gorbachev, right? They thought this guy was a modern Renaissance guy, that he was going to, you know, he would be part of Europe, everybody would be get along fine, but that's not the case. So they totally misread Putin from the beginning, and it turns out he's just another Stalin is what he is.
Exactly. Did the West actually fall into that trap because it was all about making money? Is it the trade, the gas, the oil?
Yes. It's the oil. I think it's the energy part of it. I think Europe needed the energy, and Russia had the energy, so they said, okay, you want Crimea, not a big deal. Just keep giving us the oil and gas. Of course, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, because if you don't stand up to a bully in the first place, the bully's going to keep going. So they had to stand up to him this time, because the next time it could have been Poland. And see, if it's Poland, it triggers NATO Article 5. That's different because an attack on one is an attack on all. Ukraine is not part of NATO. That's why we are not confronting Russia directly in Ukraine. We are simply sending them the weapons to fight Ukraine because once there's an attack on a NATO member, then the whole formula changes. Then you're looking at World War III.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
I said I don't think they're going to lob a missile down here in Florida. There's nothing here except alligators.
No.
So, you know, I suspect the first 20 missiles will go to Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Boston, and New York.
Well, thanks for thinking of New York.
That's why I moved to Florida. What are they going to do down here? They got golf courses. That's all I have.
Exactly.
Plus Donald Trump is here. They're not going to kill Donald Trump. He's only 20 minutes away from me.
Okay. Well, that's then I guess you're safe. Not to worry.
not to worry.
I guess when it doesn't look, is it conceivable that Putin can last much longer or? Is he really on the way out?
I can't imagine
he could last.
I know, but there's no way to know that. I mean, Russia, the people in Russia have a whole different view of this whole thing. They're being told that Ukraine is a threat. They're being told that the dead bodies in the street are a false flag operation and that they're actors. They're telling the story to the people in Russia to keep the people
I believe it.
In line, to keep them on Putin's side. If they knew the real story, there'd be a revolution, but they don't know the real story.
No, they don't know. So that's where we are at the moment, and that's the way it is.
Right.
So it's a reality. So I don't know where it's going to go because it doesn't seem to be an end game here. But does America also recognize the leadership of Biden? I think he had to walk a very, very tight rope, didn't he?
Yes,
it's
he
hard,
did.
You know,
and he did a very good job.
There was a lot of pressure to get involved and to get NATO involved. And like you said, it would have been World War III. And
correct.
What would we have gained? So this way, it does seem that he's done a good job. At least to me, it seems that, I don't know.
People don't think his approval rating hasn't gone up because people are looking at gas prices. You know, people are very selfish when they consider what's best for them. They're not looking at a foreign policy long view. That's not what they do. They go to the gas. If they see the gas is $6.50, they say Biden's a bum. You know, that's that old son of a bitch Roosevelt. The guy goes to the racetrack and he loses six races. He throws the tickets down. He goes, Roosevelt's a son of a bitch. So that's what they do. They place their frustration and their problems at the base of the presidency when he has very little to do with the price of gas.
Yeah, exactly. But where do we go though? Since we don't have any more fuel, do we?
Yeah, we do.
You know what I found was really, really very interesting. You know, I know that Israel has found gas, and they wanted to originally build pipelines through Cyprus, and the Turks didn't want that. They were against it.
Right.
And then America said, no, we don't want anything from Israel, even though they could supply the amount of gas. But now it turns out that Erdogan from Turkey says, he would like Israel to bring that forward, but he wants it pushed through Turkey. So all of a sudden, Turkey wants to become friends with Israel. Is that conceivable that we will find alternatives, not necessarily just that one, but others?
Sure.
In order to
Anything's
compensate
over.
For?
Well, the lesser Arab nations like the UAE, they're speaking with Israel. They're meeting with the prime minister. They don't have any problem doing business with Israel. And so that whole area is changing. Turkey will do what's in Turkey's financial interest.
Yes.
Now, you know, they don't have to worry about doing business with Israel if the other Arab countries, many of the Arab countries are doing the same thing. So that's not a surprise.
Is the dynamic with Russia being in a state that it's in, battling it out with Ukraine, and we don't know exactly where it's going to end, but it looks like it'll probably end with Putin being pushed out the door eventually. Would that change the entire world outlook? Give the Earth another chance, in a sense? Because we would be all basically a lot closer together. We could function together.
Yeah. If we could get rid of Putin, we could do that. Europe could do business with a Russia without Putin easily.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
easily.
What about China? Does China have a say in any of this, or would they be also a little bit more malleable to the world platform?
No, I don't believe China is malleable at all. I think they're pro-Russian. They announced they were going to stand by Russia. You know, that's one of the things about the world. You have an axis of three areas of strength. One is Russia, one is China, one is the United States and Europe together.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no, other than ideology, there's really no reason why everybody can't get along, but the world doesn't work like that. So, you know, each of these, you know, you've got the Chinese and the Russians, each have different interests. So
well,
to the
extent so
that they overlap.
Go ahead.
But no, what's interesting, I
found it interesting that at the end, even though a lot of people didn't expect very much from Biden, he did bring together probably the most powerful nation in the world, meaning the United States, and he consolidated NATO, And it does look like we have a relationship now that we've never had with Europe, ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like
true.
They were looking down at America as if we were the unsophisticated ones somehow. We were less than them somehow. What I found the most terrifying thing was I saw a 90-year-old woman who survived the Holocaust, and she left Germany and went to Ukraine. She was 90 years old, and she was crying, and she said she never thought that at the age of 90 she would have to relive what she remembered when she was so much younger. That was gut-wrenching to hear. Unbelievable. And so she escaped from Russia, from Ukraine, and she went to Germany to be saved. It's the weirdest thing in the world. What a story.
Well, this guy is, so in World War II, people were escaping Germany to go to Russia, and now they're escaping Russia to go to Germany.
Unbelievable.
It's ironic.
It very
but
much
here's
is.
The thing. Here's the thing. Putin is Stalin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so once you understand that, then you can deal with him. He has to be dealt with as if he is, which he is, a killer and a butcher.
Yeah.
And the whole world is seeing it. And Russia needs to be locked out of the economic world markets until Putin is gone. To be really simple. That's the goal. The goal should be Russia makes no money. Their rubles are worthless. Their economic condition is deteriorating by the day. And unless and until they get rid of Putin, it's going to continue. That's the way to deal with it.
Even the oligarchs and the people of power behind Putin, they know it's falling apart. They don't have a problem getting the news. Maybe the general public does, but
they're living in London.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why they call it Londongrad.
I had not heard that, but thank you for that bit of levity.
Well, they bought real estate in downtown London in the most expensive areas with their ill-gotten gains, and they attempted to one of them, Lebedev, was made a member of the House of Lords.
Mm.
He's a Russian.
Unbelievable.
He doesn't belong in the House of Lords. What kind of nonsense is that? Okay,
it's so
the guy
true.
Reading it in the House of Lords, inducting him, could hardly pronounce his name. It's like, I forget his
Amazing.
First name, but his last name was Lebedev, and he's an oligarch. It's just really upside down. So, you know, London, the British were, they were looking the other way when the money was coming in. Everything was fine.
Money has a way of doing that to people. So we malign our standards somehow.
And to countries.
Yeah, as to countries, exactly.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, what a great way to end our segment. As always, definitely an analyst and a pundit at the same time. Thank you so much, Mr. Edelman. What a
You're
pleasure.
Welcome. Speak to you next
Take
week.
Care.
Bye-bye.
And all the best. Thank you. Bye. Well, our next guest is already on the line. And bear with me a moment as I pull him in. Mr. Keston, how are you, sir?
I am well, thank you. And how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. It's been a fascinating morning. There's so much to talk about. And then you, of all people, are just the person to talk about because your legacy and your history goes back to even the days when you were in Russia and you were familiar with Ukraine. What brought you to Ukraine for the first time anyway, years ago?
Well, I thought that I was being asked to put together the 50th commemoration of the massacre at Babi Yar. That was why I originally went. And interestingly, a film will be released, if it's not already released in the United States, on Babi Yar that was made with actual footage from the period by a non-Jewish Ukrainian who is getting the heck beat out of him because it shows how many Ukrainians joined the Nazis in persecuting Jews and others in the killing fields. So it's a very interesting time for a documentary like that to be released, and it's especially interesting that it's being done by, or was done by, a well-known Ukrainian documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, amazing. You know, somehow there's always a relationship between the historical perspective and the present. We're learning a great deal that we never even knew. Is it money that allowed us to think that Russia was so powerful and that they could do what they pleased? Are we now seeing that we've got a butcher in the name of Vladimir Putin?
I don't think that it's money. It's certainly military might, which really comes down to nuclear weapon capabilities. But I think that anybody who knew anything about Putin from his time at the KGB and other security agencies knew that he was a killer and knew that everything was based on his version and his version alone of the bottom line, and that he would do anything and everything that it took to get what he wanted. So I don't really think that there's a surprise. I think that the only surprise is that leaders who we would have expected to know better around the world didn't, or hoped for something that was not reasonable. And just like leading up to the First World War, just like leading up to the Second World War, miscalculations, misjudgments always lead us to pain and suffering that could have been, in most cases, avoided had we behaved differently and done the hard things earlier rather than waited until the end.
How do we make those judgment calls? Are we swayed by, you know, making a quick buck? Are we swayed by, I don't know, persona? You know, it's just amazing. What do we get lulled into? What is the promise? Why do we go in that direction? Or is it just simply hard work for every society to find their way? Do we have to continue like this forever and ever?
Well, one would hope not, but I think it's certainly hard work to do what is right. You know, great love, great art, it's all very difficult. Building a great business is difficult. So I think that running a good government is difficult. Running a democracy is phenomenally difficult. So I think that people who head governments want to avoid war at all costs, even when the cost of avoiding war can often create a worse situation in terms of military and the like. So we saw the British prime minister, you know, go and talk to Hitler. And we saw this one go and do that and this one do that. And everybody attempted in their own way to avoid what wasn't inevitable. I mean, had we not done what we did at the end of the First World War, we could have avoided potentially the Second World War. Mm-hmm. Had we not done what we did at the end of the Civil War, we probably wouldn't be in this position that we're in as a nation right now, fighting the exact same thing that we fought in the 1860s, we're now fighting in the 2020s. So it's hard to do what's right. And doing what's right doesn't always mean that it's going to be violent, but it does mean expending money early on to do the right thing. We did the Marshall Plan. Germany is a close ally all these years later because we did what was right even though it cost money. We did not do what was right with Reconstruction. We did not do what was right at the end of the Cold War. And as I mentioned to you 2 weeks ago, you know, George Bush told me himself it would be too expensive to do the kind of diplomatic, educational infrastructure that Russia and the other Soviet republics required. It would just be too costly. Well, now I think it's getting even more costly than it would have been then had we done the right thing. And a Marshall-like plan at that time would have brought Russia and some of these other republics into the world community rather than leaving them outside feeling that everything was an existential threat.
Mm-hmm. So have we learned from that reality, or are we going to plod along in the same way? And what caused us to veer away from what we think is and has been proven through historically to be the right path, and yet is it only the monetary concern that's causing us to shy away from that, or is there some other bias?
There are other biases, but the primary probably is governments fearing spending money, and the worst of the capitalist system seeing ways of making money. So when the Cold War ended, our business people, and I use the term loosely, went into Russia, a lot of finance companies in particular, and they raped and pillaged. They made billions.
Yeah.
But Russia's people did not. And Russia did not develop new industries. It's living, in a sense, like a third world country is, as a country where it's extraction. And when other countries come in and do the extraction, or when a handful of people at most in that country become fabulously wealthy because of extracted industries, and nothing is really built there, nothing is really made there of world quality, you eventually have tremendous economic problems. And Putin is dealing with not only tremendous economic problems, but he's dealing with a perception that Russia is not a world leader. And the Russian people don't like that. He doesn't like that. And because they don't have the economic infrastructure to build themselves out of it, they are angry. They're also angry at the democracies that hold them to a higher test, one that they can't meet. And with the internet and with television and with cable and with all the other kinds of things that are available, it's much harder, generally speaking, to keep that from their people. And when the people know, as we saw in Egypt during the Arab Spring, when the young people and the others started to see what was going on in the rest of the world, they became very anxious and very disappointed in the country that they were living in, where there was no opportunity. The opportunity was sucked out by the elite. That's what happens in dictatorships. The elite sucks out all the opportunity and possibility, and the public is left with nothing. And eventually nothing is something worth fighting against.
So one of the tenets that you believe in, and that is a part of the dogma that you always espouse, is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's the backbone of your work and the work of this operation called, you're the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, and it's part of the Shulamit Koenig Foundation.
Institute
get
for
to the point?
Human Rights Action.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can we get to that sort of concept where all human beings are born free and equal, or do we always have to have a hierarchy of some higher than others? Can we be respectful by respecting each other as equals, or is that like not going to happen when you have people like Putin who seem to be weaklings and think they can espouse their way to the top with bluster?
Well, I wouldn't say that Putin is a weakling. I would just say that he has a particular mindset of an autocrat, and the only way to address autocrats is to empower people. You know, it's mm-hmm. very clear, you know, the United States Constitution, we the people, but yet we don't do that. We have, over the 250-plus years, allowed ourselves to be convinced that we are electing leaders who will take care of the hard work while we go about our lives. And maybe we'll mm-hmm. vote. Maybe we won't even do that. But the average person doesn't know what's going on. They don't know how government runs. Most people couldn't name the three divisions of government, you know, the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. Lots mm-hmm. of people don't know who their governor is or who their senators are, or certainly don't know the people at the most local level. And if you don't know the people that are elected to represent you, they're not your leaders. They're your representatives. And we've got to get mm-hmm. to a place where people understand what the role of those people they vote for are. I mm-hmm. vote for a representative to carry my message to the local legislature, the state legislature, or the federal government. I don't elect them to lead me. In a sense, I elect them to follow my lead. But we have abrogated
our responsibility.
But that's a total disconnect.
Most people don't see it that way, do they? They think of them as leaders. But they're not.
They shouldn't be
in the leadership role.
They're not in a leadership role. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
When you expect them to solve the problems and to answer your needs without asking you, you're mm-hmm. going to get them self-serving themselves, because there really is no direction and there really is no one they're responsible to.
Correct.
If there's nobody holding their feet to the fire, if there's nobody holding them accountable, then they allow themselves to do the kinds of things that they can get away with. So they can still do insider trading. They can still hire and fire without recourse.
And they do.
Things that the public cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at your legislators who have been in office for long periods of time, and you look at what wealth they had going into office. And then you see the wealth they have coming out of office, and it's shocking.
It's unbelievable. Yes, it is. And they have all this insider trading thing. We don't put them in jail for that.
Because it's legal for them to do it.
Yes, it is.
I guess we
can't fault everything at once. Do we go in incremental steps? Do you think that government will change? Or is it only when more people recognize, hey, why do they get away with it? And I forgot the woman's name who was in the cooking business, and she supposedly had some insider trading, and she had to pay an unbelievable fine for it. But, in the Senate, they can do whatever they want, and that's okay.
Well, it was Martha Stewart.
Yeah, Martha Stewart.
And
Martha
Stewart paid a ridiculous price for being famous. Basically, that was it. But it's not that, you know, we have to remember, Congress or state legislators, whomever, they're not getting away with it. What they're mm-hmm. doing is they're just doing what they can do because they don't have anybody to really report to. Because the public has neglected its responsibility. And that's really the only way government will change, is when the public takes responsibility that it is given in the Constitution, that it is given in all the other legal documents to take control and to be in control.
Yeah.
But be in control by being informed, not just being in control because you can. And people are lazy, and people don't want to read, and people don't want to listen, and people are more concerned about and interested in the Kardashians than they are about how the United States Senate works, how you confirm a Supreme Court justice, how you mm-hmm. pass a bill into law. People just, oh, God, that's so boring, I just don't know. I would much prefer to see what Kim Kardashian
Lady Gaga. Yeah.
Or Lady Gaga. But at least Lady Gaga does some good things, but it's important to know what those good things are and why than any other part of Lady Gaga. So, you know, once again, it's we sort of have a celebrity culture because it's an escapist culture. It allows us to pay attention to things that aren't as important, sort of like the Oscars. We're still talking about a slap rather than figuring out why we have a violent society that is tolerable.
Yeah, exactly.
And
to be honest, I think that went the wrong way totally. I mean, I think the comedian, I think he shouldn't have said what he said. And, you know, maybe the response was a little bit too over the top, but I thought he was right at the end. I would defend my wife. You know, she has a disease and everybody knew it. But I don't understand why we have to make fun of people. I don't
know. Well, but comedians do make fun of people. And the most successful comedians often do that well. The thing is that everything in its situation, that was an entertainment show.
Yes.
And that was, and you don't have to
that
like
the entertainment.
That should have been the parameter. And that was the parameter. And that wasn't defending his wife as much as it was showing that he was macho.
That's
his
very
wife,
true. Very
from
well
everything put. from everything that everybody has ever said about his wife, she is quite capable of defending herself. So she didn't need him to go up on stage and embarrass himself.
Right.
She really didn't. Now the other
thing is
that happened in Hollywood, and just a few days later, someone or some people with guns shot up Sacramento.
Yes. Unbelievable.
We're not talking about, right, but we're not talking about that and how to stop that kind of violence nearly as much or for how long we talked about a slap on the stage of a theatrical endeavor. We talk less about the human tragedy in Israel, the human tragedy in Ukraine, the human tragedy in Syria, the human tragedy in with the Rohingya, the human tragedy with all of these other things that are going on in the world, most of them people are totally unfamiliar with, than we do about something that takes our mind away from the real life things that we should at least know about.
How do we bring that about, though? How do we make people more aware? Or is that an inquisitive factor that they may just not have? Or maybe their lifestyle doesn't bring them to know? Maybe a lack of inquisitiveness somehow?
There is a lack of curiosity, but I think that that is has been baked into the society. The governments in general do not want curious populations. They want populations that go from day to day to day. You know, I've got to go to the gas station. I've got to look at the prices. I've got to do this. Look at the prices. How am I going to make ends meet? That's what they want the public to worry about. That's why Rick Scott, the senator, the United States senator from Florida, and Mitt Romney, the United States senator from Michigan, and many others in Congress on the Republican or right side of the aisle, they're not all Republicans anymore, but they are right, are opposed to Social Security, and they're opposed to Medicare, and they're opposed to all the kinds of services that Americans not only have paid into, but are reliant on, especially as they age, or if you are mentally ill or if you're physically handicapped. And they have called for either reductions or elimination of those programs.
Yeah.
Rick Scott, who is the chairman of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, the man who's helping elect senators for the 2022 election. His proposal, his platform, is to raise taxes on the 50% poorest Americans and to ease taxes on the upper 1% of Americans.
Yeah.
So
seems
if
like
people don't understand,
world.
Right, and Mitt Romney, who's considered the great moderate, has said that we should reduce the amount of Social Security and Medicare because it's too costly. Yet, he says that out of the same side of his mouth that says there should be a reduction in taxes for those who are fabulously wealthy who benefit from a very broken system.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Where is his moderation? His moderation for the public is simply that he doesn't like Donald Trump. That makes him a moderate. Politically, he is not moderate. Politically, he is not interested in the American people. He's interested in preserving the American elite.
Yeah.
But until people
exactly.
start to pay attention, until people start to pay attention, the Mitt Romneys and the Rick Scotts and the Josh Hawleys and the Ted Cruzes will continue to run half of the American government, even though they don't represent half the American people.
So does it look like we've created this divide? Is that where we are now? Is it conceivable we'll ever coalesce and have a much more knowledgeable insight into what's going on? Or are we now just irrevocably divided?
Well, nothing is irrevocable, except
Shouldn't
for that
be.
We will all die at some point.
That's true.
But, you know, there's that other expression of it always, you always have to hit rock bottom before you can heal. And
yes, that's true.
It would seem that we are heading in that direction. My job, the work that I do every day, is trying to prevent that, while at the same time hoping to provide people with enough information so that if we do end up hitting rock bottom at some point, we will have a foundation to recover from.
Yeah. So do you find that more people are interested in these sort of ethical standards that you show people can and do exist? Are they becoming more familiar?
No.
No.
It's frustrating. Everybody is too busy. Everybody thinks that what they're doing is the most important thing in the world, and I get it. But as I believe we've discussed before, if you think the environment is the most important thing because without a planet that is habitable, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can't save our democracy, the people who will come into office are not at all interested in saving the planet. So
you have to learn to
prioritize. If you believe that women have rights, if you believe that children have rights, if you believe that we should all be able to vote and those are your top priorities, that's wonderful. But first, you have to save democracy. You have to save the rule of law. You have to strengthen the very levers of what makes our unique system of government unique. And as long as people put the other stuff first, we will keep slipping and slipping. And the likes of Ron DeSantis in Florida and Abbott in Texas and a handful of others will continue to grow in their power as they turn their states into duchies or principalities, passing laws that they hope will get to court so that this Supreme Court and other courts will defend states' rights and abridge the rights of the federal government. And once the idea of nationhood is broken down, the rest will fall flat on its face very,
yeah.
very quickly, because as Lincoln said, a house divided against itself cannot stand, and we must be all yeah. one thing or all the other, but we can't be both.
Mm-hmm. So how do we engage people to become more aware? Or is that just a process that's going to take their your lifetime and everybody else's lifetime? And will we get anywhere?
Well, if every time you had a program, so I don't
yeah.
know how many days a week you're on the radio, but if every day you were on the radio, you took one of the articles from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and just read it and asked
mm-hmm.
people to read the Declaration, to read it. If every
mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving and every New Year's, families got together and together read the Universal Declaration, read the United States Constitution, became familiar
mm-hmm.
with the very foundational documents that give us the strength we need and the legal underpinnings that we need to go forward, then those things would become part of who we are. So it's people
uh-huh.
like you printing those things, reading those things, reminding people of those things. We need media to do its job, and that's no offense to you, because certainly there are media outlets with tremendous outreach that
oh, yeah.
could over time change the world. But that doesn't necessarily bring in the dollars that those companies that compete with each other for advertising dollars
mm-hmm.
and eyeballs are doing. But that's where it has
yeah.
to come from. Someone like me just going around may touch 10 people or 100 people or even a million people. But in a world of 8 billion people, that's not enough to get to
mm-hmm.
the tipping point. It takes people bringing it up, spreading it around. Like, as soon as we're finished, I go into a meeting. I've got my Universal Declaration of Human Rights sheets with me, and I'm giving it to the people that I'm meeting with at 11:35. I'm hoping that they will then take those sheets and they will share them with other people, so that one person becomes three people, becomes five people, becomes 20 people.
Well, I think this is the best thing I've heard all day and all year. So I think that has to be my challenge. I'm on every Monday through Friday, and there's certainly time slots where I can fit in and can read some of these sort of documentation on the air. It'll be terrific. It's more important
right.
than a lot of the individual. Say that again.
And then you can even open it up for conversation.
All the better.
Right.
That's
you know.
Perfect.
So let's just Article 10. Everyone has the right to a fair trial. What does that mean?
Exactly.
What does that mean if you don't trust the what does that mean if you don't trust the judicial system?
Yeah.
You know, so there are ways of discussing it and thinking about it and challenging yourself and challenging others into how do we do better? How do we do better? If that is a human right and a human right is inalienable, not given by government,
yes.
not taken by
right.
government, how do we make it work for us?
It sounds like that's the task. I'm going to do it. All right. Thank you very much.
Great. And anytime you need help from me, you just let me know.
Appreciate that. Thanks for just the directive. You know, I think that's very good. That'll be my thing. I'll get started next week, and we'll keep following it up until the end of my time. You never know.
That would
fantastic.
Be great.
Well, listen, thank you so much. I don't want to keep you from your meeting because you've got to get there as well. And thanks for everything. I appreciate it very much. Be well.
My pleasure. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Robert Keston. He's it's just always wonderful to talk to him, and there's something new to learn from him every day. And so I've got my task set, and I'm going to have to get that done. And what I best do before I forget, you know, I'm not that forgetful. Let me just put this down in paper, because I have to get all these things done. So, okay, just put it down, his name will be enough for me to know that I have to do that. So that'll be, we'll have the future. That'll be very good. It'll actually give me, I could certainly devote a half hour at least once a week, but I'm sure I could do it two or three times a week. So that'll work out perfectly. All right, let's go on and do something else now. And let's cover some other news stories, which hopefully will bring us up to date on some other issues. So, with regard to Ukraine, Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz has vowed to respond over the deaths that took place in this city or this town called Bucha, B-U-C-H-A. So what German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says is that the West will impose new sanctions on Russia in the next few days. And the discovery of hundreds of bodies in a town outside of Kyiv drew horror around the world. The mayor of Bucha said that at least 280 people were buried in mass graves. Germany vows more Western sanctions on Russia after civilian killings. Ukraine's foreign minister calls for the massacre in Bucha to have been deliberate. Germany, France, the United States, and NATO condemn the civilian deaths in Bucha. Kyiv says that a dozen regional politicians have been detained by Russia. A Red Cross evacuation mission hopes to reach Mariupol later on Sunday. And so that was yesterday, but this has all been updated. So let's talk about Human Rights Watch says that the killings in Bucha could constitute war crimes. A leading rights group known as Human Rights Watch said that Russian forces had committed atrocities in several Ukrainian cities. Quote, it's quite clear that there have been war crimes committed against civilians, and the task of investigators will be to decide how many and on what kind of scale they occurred, and ultimately, who's responsible. So, Eileen Wrighty, she's a senior legal advisor at Human Rights Watch, said that the killings of civilians in Bucha would likely constitute war crimes. In Bucha itself, there are certainly war crimes, potential crimes against humanity, where we're seeing civilians killed, clearly killed in a summary execution format, Wrighty had said. However, she said it was too early, quote unquote, to label atrocities in Ukraine as genocide, the term used by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky during an interview with United States channel CBS on this past Sunday. So the United Kingdom says that Mariupol is putting up staunch resistance despite indiscriminate strikes. Well, the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense said the besieged port city of Mariupol continued to be hit by intense indiscriminate strikes, quote unquote, but it added that Ukrainian forces, quote, maintain a staunch resistance, end quote. In an intelligence update, the ministry said that Mariupol was almost certainly a key objective of the Russian invasion, as it would secure a land corridor from Russia, the occupied peninsula of Crimea. The city on the Sea of Azov has seen some of the war's heaviest bombardments and remains cut off. About 100,000 civilians are believed to be trapped there with little or no food, water, fuel, and or even medicine. Russia requested a meeting of the United Nations Security Council on Monday, today, to discuss what Moscow called a, quote, provocation by Ukrainian radicals, end quote, in the town of Bucha. On Saturday, Ukrainian troops recaptured the town near Kyiv, finding bodies of civilians in the streets and in mass graves whom locals said had been killed by Russians without provocation. Some had been found and apparently executed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russia of committing genocide. Russia described photos and videos from the town as a, quote, staged performance, end quote, despite the firsthand verifications of the killings by journalists from several international outlets. Well, Russian troops have been accused of targeting Ukrainian women with sexual violence. Ukrainian Minister of Parliament Oleksiy Goncharenko said that the bodies of naked women had been discovered on a road not far from Kyiv. Goncharenko said that after assaulting the women, Russian troops had tried burning their bodies. Russia's defense ministry said it has carried out a number of airstrikes on Ukrainian military facilities and fuel depots in the capital of Kyiv and Mykolaiv in the south. Now, defense ministry spokesperson Igor Konashenkov said on Sunday that an air control center had been targeted and destroyed in Vasilkiv near the capital. The mayor of Mykolaiv had earlier reported there had been several rocket attacks. Ukrainian Prosecutor General Irina Venediktova said on Facebook that 410 bodies of dead civilians had been recovered near Kyiv following Russia's withdrawal from the area. Forensic experts are on the ground to examine the bodies and gather information. United Nations General Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed shock at the discoveries made in the town of Bucha and called for an independent investigation in a post on Twitter. Quote, I am deeply shocked by the images of civilians killed in Bucha, Ukraine. It is essential that an independent investigation leads to effective accountability, Guterres said in his post. Over 500,000 people have returned to Ukraine, so says the Interior Ministry. Ukraine's Interior Ministry has reported that over 500,000 people have been returned or have returned to the country since Russia launched its invasion on February 24. During the past week, 144 people left Ukraine and 88,000 arrived. In total, around 537,000 of our compatriots have returned to Ukraine, end quote, the ministry said, with figures from the National Border Service. Hold on a split second. We'll see what that is. Bear with me a minute. Sorry about that. I didn't expect any calls coming in, but evidently they are. All right, so I guess that's about it. I won't be able to continue any further, so I just wish you a good day, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.